This is the Talk Theater in Chicago interview podcast for December 21st. I'm your host this week, Anne Nicholson Weber, and today I'm joined by Chuck Spencer, Jason Heisman, and Greg Caldwell, who are three of the cast members in the production of Death of a Salesman currently up at Raven Theater. And I wanted to talk about what to me seems distinctive about this production, and maybe to get there talking a bit about casting and process, rehearsal process. So, Chuck, let me start with you. You play Willie, an iconic character in American theater.
Yes.
How did it come about that you were cast in this play?
I'm a member of Raven Theater. I have been for several years, and we had a company meeting, and that's when it was presented to me. And Michael Menendian, who's the artistic director, wanted me to play Willie. And at first, my reaction was very negative because of its iconic nature, and it's such a big role. I really wasn't sure if I wanted to do it. And but Michael helped me through that process, and he really just encouraged me to approach it as any other role. You know, just I had to wipe out all of those fears that I had of expectations and other men who have played the role, you know. And so I just approached it like everything else. I looked at it as a script, a brand new character that I didn't know anything about, mm-hmm. and started peeling back the layers of the onions like I do every character that I play.
Was it only the kind of cultural importance of the character that intimidated you, or was there anything about, you know, forget all the hype, was there anything about Willie Loman that you found inaccessible or daunting?
No, as a matter of fact, that's what saved me, because mm-hmm. he's so rich with so many different emotions that it began to be a fun process. So Willie himself, it really was the outside expectations that I was concerned about, mm-hmm. and really, you know, it's such a star vehicle for big actors. You know, mm-hmm. of course, Brian Dennehy has played it, Dustin Hoffman has played it, Lee J. Cobb did it on Broadway, and those are all great names. You know,
right?
One of the things that I think is unique about this show is that we didn't have like a big star playing Willie, and as much as I'd like to think I am, I'm not. And I think that when audiences come to see this, the comments that I hear are, well, I've never seen, you know, I've never understood different aspects of it. Like, mm-hmm. for example, a lot of people have said, this is really Biff's story, isn't it? It's not necessarily Willie's story. And you could argue that, but I think people recognize it because I think in a lot of productions, the big star plays Willie, and so everybody's focused on the big star. And in this one, because we approached it as just another story that we wanted to tell, it's a magnificent story, that people are noticing Biff more, and they notice his part in it, you know. And I don't think that that Biff and Happy are overshadowed by the bigness of a star. You know, it's really just us attacking the characters, and I think that the story has come alive because of that. People have commented on it many times to us.
That was very much my experience of it, that it was the relationships, even most of all between Willie and Biff, but the three men, the three boys.
Yes.
When I thought about who did I want to interview this, I mean, obviously Chuck as Willie, but I also, I think, was drawn to include Jason and Greg, who play Biff and Happy, the two sons, because somehow in this production, those relationships were really the heart of it in a way that I hadn't remembered, you know, that being my experience before. So, Jason, you play Biff, and as Chuck just said, some audience members have said this is as much your story as Willie's, mm-hmm. which was also my experience of it. And I wondered if we could take a minute now and do the scene that is the climax of the play, in my view, probably in everybody's, and because it's the moment when this relationship between a disaffected father and son is kind of resolved. You break through to each other for the only time in the play. Would you be willing to do that?
Sure, sure.
Do you want to get up to do it? Or?
Sure. Yeah.
All right. And do you want to be? You should be in there, don't you think?
Sure.
Yeah, that's Happy. Happy is physically
he's
involved with them.
He's got to hold Biff back. He's going to attack me.
That's right. All right, just when you're ready.
Okay. The door to your life is wide open. Pop, I'm a dime a dozen, and so are you.
I am not a dime a dozen. I am Willie Loman, and you are Biff Loman.
I am not a leader of men, Willie, and neither are you. You were never anything but a hard-working drummer who landed in the ash can like all the rest of them. I'm $1 an hour, Willie. I tried 7 states and couldn't raise it. $1 an hour. Do you gather my meaning? I'm not bringing home any prizes anymore, and you're going to stop waiting for me to bring them home.
You vengeful, spiteful mutt!
Pop, I'm nothing. I'm nothing, Pop. Can't you understand that? There's no spite in it anymore. I'm just what I am, that's all.
What are you doing? What are you doing? Why is he crying?
Will you let me go, for Christ's sake? Will you take that phony dream and burn it up before something happens? I'll go in the morning. Put him to bed.
Isn't that remarkable? Biff, he likes me.
Do you need a Kleenex?
Wow. There's something really
it's emotional. It's emotional. Yeah. She got a chance to visually see it too, so.
Right, yeah. Right. And that may not all come over across the mic, but I think there is something extraordinary too about seeing it out of context and seeing these actors be able to go there emotionally, you know, when 1 minute ago we were in the middle of an interview and they're not in costume and there's, you know. Anyway.
It's powerful because, I mean, Arthur Miller has written, the whole play is written so perfectly. There's not a word in it that's not meant to be in it.
Right.
And it's perfect, you know, and that's part of it. But I think that also in that scene, everybody's touched because at points in our lives, you know, we try to be honest with our family members. Sometimes right. They allow us to be honest and sometimes not. But all of us have gone through that, and I think that's another beautiful moment in that in the play, is that everybody can relate to that. Everybody's had a struggle with their parent at some point, and that's powerful. It's right. Powerful because of that. That's what makes the scene powerful.
Yeah, because I feel that Biff is trying to save his father. You know, he knows he's on the brink of ending his life, and he's torn. Because he wants to save him, but also at the same time he doesn't want to. You know, he's torn by the whole event because he just wants to walk away and be done with everybody, but he can't. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the family ties that brings him back. Biff also has great memories of growing up with Willie and the family, and it's just that one moment in time when he catches Willie in the act, you know, with the other woman that just totally blows up his whole world. And for years, Biff has gone through life in a fog and wants to blame Willie, but has finally come to realize that goes back to Biff, that what he makes of his life is what he makes of it. It's not what has happened to him in the past, you know. Mm-hmm. You have to just let it go and, you know, deal with it.
Well,
I think so.
Let me pick up on you're talking about the happy memories. I think it might, just to give a flavor of a very different strand in the play, maybe we could go back and do one of the flashback scenes that probably almost anybody listening to this has actually some concept of how the play works, but just to set the predicate, Willie, who is essentially having a nervous breakdown, frequently in the course of the play flashes back to scenes which may not be accurate. They may be how he remembers them, not what really happened.
I think that's a very important point. And anybody who's watching the show really would need to understand that you know, your memories are always happier or worse, depending on what the memory is. But yes, we talked about that at great length in the rehearsal process, that it should be bigger than what it probably really was.
Right.
And it was because it's so joyful. It was so happy. You know?
Right.
Yeah.
This is a rose-tinted glasses memory. Sure. If you guys could just do that scene you, Willie, are just, you, Chuck, as Willie, are telling the boys about this sales trip you just took.
Sure, sure. And then I went to, let me start that again. and then on to Portland. and banger and straight home.
Gee, I'd love to go with you sometime, Dad.
Soon as summer comes.
You promise?
Oh, sure. You and Hap and I'll show you all the towns. America is filled with beautiful towns, boys, and fine, upstanding people. And they know me. They know me up and down New England, the finest people. When I bring you fellas up, it's going to be open sesame for all of us, because there's one thing, boys. I have friends. I can park my car on any street in New England, and the cops protect it like their own. This summer, huh?
You
yeah.
bet!
We'll take our bathing suit!
We'll carry your bags, Pop!
Won't that be something? Me walking into the Boston stores with you boys carrying my bags. What a sensation!
Perfect. Well, I'm so glad we talked about the give me an adjective for the quality of those scenes, that this bigger than life, because it almost, as you did it now and as you did it in the performance, there's, I don't want to say fakeness, that's not right, but it's...
exaggerated.
It's a dreamlike quality.
Yeah, exaggerated, yeah. Right. It's yeah. stylized.
Yeah, very stylized.
Yeah. Which is interesting, because in some ways those are the only scenes where you just got regular people kind of acting regular. Nobody's going crazy or having these huge moments. They're just small domestic scenes. And yet there's almost like a 1950s television quality to it.
Yeah,
do you know what
yeah.
I mean? Gee whiz.
Like, leave it to me.
Boy!
Yeah, right. So Biff and Happy, for you, you're going back. Well, everybody's going back decades. But you're playing boys, which is a much... more of a transformation. How did you go about creating your relationship as brothers and being kids?
Well, Jason's the only person in the Lohman family that I have never worked with before. Mm-hmm. I've been in lots of shows with Chuck. I've been in lots of shows with Joanne. Joanne's played my mom a number of times. And just meeting Jason and, I mean, going through the actual read-throughs and whatnot, I mean, we needed to bond. We had to become brothers. Mm-hmm. And before the show every night, I mean, we throw the football around and just go through lines and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of our special time and, you know, bonding together.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Throwing the football was... a great idea yeah. to do for the show. Plus, I've dropped the ball twice now in the show. And Greg has...
The big football star.
Greg hasn't dropped it yet.
Including last night.
Including last night.
We had to fumble. Yeah. Where is that damn?
I was like, oh, brick hands.
Well, what physically, what do you... I mean, maybe it's not conscious, but how do you change... you're not doing high voices or anything... you know, as kind of literal as that. What in your mind distinguished the boy version of Hap and of Biff?
You just put a lot more energy in,
yeah,
in everything, and everything you do is a lot faster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, we anytime we come onto stage or leave stage, we're running.
We're running, yeah. So there's a physicality about it coming into the scene with mm-hmm. a lot of energy, and it helps propel that going through the scene.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And just having a being more, I guess, because Biff is kind of, when we see him as an adult, he's kind of a downer, you know.
Yeah.
He's struggling with things. He has a lot of weight to him. When he's the kid in high school, he's more up. He has lighter, you know. He has more free spirit. And so that's kind of how I feel about
it. And Hap hasn't really changed that, because when I'm a kid – you know, I'm just constantly trying to get attention.
Right.
And the same thing happens as an adult.
Mm-hmm. There's that cute moment as a boy when you go up and do a bicycle in the air,
yep.
kind of trying to get someone to look at you,
yep.
poor kid.
Yeah, Happy's desperately attempting to get Willie's attention all mm-hmm. the time. I think another thing in those scenes, too, is that, and I think this is maybe the focal point for all of us, is we all love each other so much. And I think that that's something that Miller wanted to emphasize.
Right.
You know, Willie loves his boys. These boys love Willie so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's part of the enthusiasm that everybody feels. It's like, well, let's show each other how much we love each other, you know? And I think that's the intention of it. That's part of the intention of it. Mm-hmm.
Although I would say for me that what was interesting and I think effective on top of that love and that pleasure in each other's company, there is an anxiety in those scenes. Because already the foundation for these lies that topple the family mm-hmm. is being laid.
Yeah.
And I feel like everybody knows that there's something not quite right. I mean, and Miller puts it in the script, you know, Biff steals and Willie says, good job,
yeah.
you know.
It's okay.
You know, right.
Well, it becomes a euphemism. He says, well, it's not stealing. It's
right.
it's something else, you
right.
know.
Right. The self-deception that ultimately brings everybody down, except we hope maybe Biff, is already at play in those scenes. And something about the, again, this kind of hyper-energetic 1950s, as I said, you know, television quality to me brought that out, that there's something not completely authentic. I mean, the relationships are authentic, but something else, there's something not quite, something rotten here at the same time. Well, another, Chuck talked about how the fact that he's not this huge, charismatic, established star has changed the dynamic of the show, and I think that's very true. How does that difference, not that you've ever played it with a different Willie, but I imagine that you have to, Greg and Jason, you have to develop Biff and Happy to be the sons of this Willie, not some other Willie. Did that go into your process at all consciously?
No, I think I just approached it because I like this. It's a wonderful story. The relationships, you know, whenever I watch a play, a movie, what have you, or read a play, I look for the relationships. You know, do I care about these people? You know. Mm-hmm. And each person in the play, you do care about. I mean, you feel something for them. And I really like Biff's character because he has such an arc. And that's where I came from. That's where I approached the character.
Well, have you seen other versions of Death of a Salesman?
I've never seen one, no.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Have you, Greg?
I've not. I mean, I've never seen, you know, the great Dustin Hoffman movie, or some people say it's not that great. I've never seen the movie, and I've never seen any of the big productions that have come through Chicago. Yeah.
So that's part of what Chuck was saying. You just come at it like any other play. And how about you, Chuck? Had you seen other performances?
Yes, quite a few, actually. I've seen Dustin Hoffman do it on the CBS broadcast. There's actually an old DVD, or it's a video of Lee J. Cobb doing it too. It was made for television back in the 60s, I think, in the early 60s, and I happened to stumble on that, so I saw that. We did it in college. I was in it. Raven did it in 1995, and actually I played Willie's brother Ben in that production, so I was in that. So yeah, I'm very familiar with it too.
Well, this is probably an unfair question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. How would you describe the difference in what you're doing compared to other? You are more blah than most Willies. Well, you are.
You don't have a play unless you, as Jason said, he likes everybody in the play, and if you don't like Willie Loman, you don't have a play. So I really wanted to focus on, even though Willie has made bad choices, he's not the nicest person in the world. He treats his wife very badly sometimes, almost emotionally abusive at times. Despite all of those flaws that he has, it would have been a disaster if the audience didn't like Willie. Mm-hmm. And it's not a tragedy if you don't like Willie. Then it's just becomes, you know, watching an ugly man at work. Mm-hmm. So the tragedy of it is to love Willie, despite his flaws. So I wanted to focus on that. And also, I also wanted to show why Willie is deteriorating, you know. And I think he has dementia, I think maybe beginning Alzheimer's. And so I wanted to focus also on the physical deterioration. I wanted the audience to really understand what is going on with him, you know, and to really see that. My father, in the last year of his life, went through something similar, and it's kind of, I sort of am honoring him in this play because I'm playing him. I watched my dad mumble to himself. I watched my dad physically deteriorate mentally, and so that's what I really wanted to show the audience. I wanted them to really see that, you know, and I think that many of them have commented, is like it's been so interesting to watch you deteriorate, and I understand Willie a little bit more, you know. So,
yeah, when you first come on in the very opening of the play and sort of muttering and just shuffling and this beaten down physicality, we know things are not good.
A woman in the audience the other night said, you know, when you came on, I was just as exhausted as you were watching. I got tired watching you, you know. Uh-huh. So I thought that was a wonderful thing to hear.
Well, my reaction to your characterization was that Willie was smaller. He was more, there was more irony in the contrast between his fantasy of who he was and who we see him being, even in his heyday. Some of the other portrayals, you kind of see something. He comes closer to being heroic in his younger days somehow. And maybe that's partly just you're not a big guy. You're not Brian Dennehy. I mean, we have those shoulders. And
sure.
And to me, that irony is really moving, you know, this the contrast between this sort of just human scale person and his larger than life fantasies. And so that's the effect of it for me.
Yeah, you know, I had read that Arthur Miller really had his first thoughts about Willie Loman were based on several different men that he knew, but I he had a relative who was
his two uncles, actually.
Yeah, I think
were both salesmen.
Yeah, yeah. He saw Willie as a slight, smaller man.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, Lee J. Cobb made the role famous, and Lee J. Cobb, like Brian Dennehy, they're both large men.
Right.
And so I think that and Willie being larger than life, and those two physically being big men, has sort of captured people's imaginations that that's what Willie should be.
Right.
But really, that's not how Arthur Miller saw him. And I agree. I think that it's perhaps I've made it, I don't know, more of a more human, you know,
scale,
more on a human scale. I'm not really sure what I'm trying to say. I'm agreeing with what you just said.
Oh, good. I was right.
Yes, you were. You're absolutely right. Absolutely.
Other thing I saw in your portrayal was the always feeling two or three things at once. You're just a mess pretty much all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And that comes out in the way you interrupt yourself and shift in a moment from one to another, contradict yourself moment to moment. All of that came out to me, again, in ways I hadn't necessarily seen.
You know, I have to mention Michael Menendian in this because I think that he's got such a great eye for stories like this. And one of the things that Michael taught me early on as an actor is that you don't have to pause if you shift in your mind, because we don't do that as human beings. If you ever go to a party and listen to people chatter, they're talking about several different things and their mind switches on a dime, you know, and we do that naturally. But sometimes when we act, we think, oh, I have to make sure I present this emotion and then pause and present another emotion. And that's not the way.
Underlining
this is, do you get what I'm trying to say?
And
it's just characters become more fascinating on stage, I think, when they are flying through their thought process.
Yeah.
And Willie does that. He changes his mind constantly.
Yeah.
But we all do that.
Right.
We all do that. And so that's one thing that Michael, I think, taught me as an actor is stop preaching. Stop taking these pauses. Just go for it, you know. You know how you are at a party, you know. And so I think earlier we were talking about how sometimes we overlap lines.
Right.
And I think that's a good thing in this play, because I think it does a couple of different things. It keeps the story moving, but it also shows respect for another character in the play. For example, you know, I don't think that Willie treats Linda so wonderfully at times, you know, and he bowls over her, anything she's got to say. He even says to her, oh, shut up, you know, or stop talking, stop interrupting. And even if I'm not saying that, I'm not really listening to her. I'm moving forward and I'm going over what she has to say, not really paying any attention. And I think that Arthur Miller intended that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It is certainly a guy's play, although there are three women,
four
characters, yeah.
Willie's wife, Linda. Mm-hmm. There's two girls that Biff and Happy try to pick up at a restaurant. Mm-hmm. And then there is a woman who Willie has an affair with.
The other woman.
And Jenny.
Right.
What?
Jenny.
And Jenny, the receptionist.
And Jenny, the receptionist.
Oh, right.
Yes. And I didn't think of her because many of the roles are double cast in this production.
But although, I mean, I remember being kind of surprised at the curtain call that there were actually that many women on the stage, because it is so much about the men.
Yeah, yeah.
And the relationship. I mean, Linda, obviously, is key. Well, let's talk, going back to the sons just a little bit, since I hauled you in here on Sunday before your show. What were the most difficult scenes or the most difficult aspects of what you had to do? Maybe start with Greg.
I think it's partially what we were just talking about, is going over one another. I mean, especially for my character, Happy, if I'm not Willie Loman Jr., I'm nothing. I mean, I'm going down the same exact path
so
as Willie Loman is. And where you know, maybe I'm not married and I'm not going to have the kids. I mean, I'm a womanizer just like Willie was. And everything that I have to say is so much more important than anything going else on. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to bowl over what you have to say, and I'm not listening, especially in the restaurant scene where my brother Biff is trying to tell me, you know, what his day was like. My most important thing is, did you tell him my idea? And hey, what about these girls? I mean, that's all that's on my mind. You know?
So. Although I would say you're like your father in another way, which is it's partly anxiety pushing away the truth. I mean, at any time that the truth rears its ugly head, Happy's going to try to push it away, fix it, paper it over. That's
put a
kind
smile
of,
on.
Yes. And he comes up with things on the spot, too.
Right. You know?
Like, oh, hey.
Just cover it up. Just cover it up.
Cover up, right. He's the cover up guy. Yeah. So, Jason, for you, what were the challenges of Biff?
I think just being able to... it's hard for me to talk about my process, I guess, in life, because I don't know if I can make sense of it verbally.
Well, I'm glad you had the interview then.
I know, exactly. I think the challenge was just being able to tell Biff's story, or, you know, because, you know, he keeps coming back, and he's going back and forth all the time from New York to back to the West, and he keeps being pulled back by his demons, you know, and the closer he gets, you know, he just to New York, I can just see, you know, I can feel it, you know, the closer he's just starts getting anxious and upset with himself, like, why am I doing this? Why am I doing this? I don't want to be here. But he feels that he has to be a success. He's had that drilled into his head for, you know, 17 years of his life. And then
the wheels fell off.
The wheels fell off.
One of the things that Biff does is articulate, well, both Willie and Biff do, articulate an alternative version of manliness other than the successful slick guy is this broad-shouldered guy with his shirt off in, you know, kind of out in the West. Are you actually an outdoors guy? Are you someone to whom that called?
You personally? Yeah, I would say I've always been a strong back, weak mind type guy.
Well, it's interesting. I, the reason I asked that question is because I really saw the picture of, you know, the sun beating down and the shirtless guy and the out in the prairie or whatever. Yeah. You know, when you did that, and that's the only believable alternative that the play offers. You know, you really start to want these guys to go out there and just build something with their hands, and you know, which is obviously Miller's idea. I've learned that there are two kinds of actors. There are actors who can talk about what they do, and there are actors who just do it. And that's, who cares if you can talk about it? You sure can do it. Well, I think we probably need to stop because you've got a call coming up. But I just want to say thank you for helping me to see the play in a different way.
Sure. You know, today's the 21st, and I just want to mention that we have a three... We're not performing the show on Christmas weekend, but we are performing it beginning. We're picking it up on
New Year's Day,
January 1st, and then we run through
the 16th, January 16th.
So there's three more weekends that you can see this show.
You know, that raises one last thing I want to ask you about. I heard an actor describe what it's like when you're doing a taxing show and you're coming up to the closing date, and then they say, hey, guys, we're extending. He said, it's just exactly like if you're running a marathon and you get to within a mile of the finish line. They say, oh, no, we just added 5 miles to the course. Does it feel like that to you, or were you glad for the extension?
We sort of knew. I mean, the Lohman family was sort of cast knowing that there was the possibility of an extension. Uh-huh. So
you've been pacing yourself.
We knew that
January
the end would really be the 16th of January.
I would love it to extend for a year. All of us are having such fun. Just before we arrived here at the theater today, a man stopped me on the street. He had seen the show last night, and he loved it. And he said, how do you go through those emotions? You know, how does everybody go through those emotions? You must be exhausting. And the answer is yes, it is exhausting, but we are having so much fun. Uh-huh. You know, it's interesting to say we're having fun doing a tragedy, you know, but it is. It's fun, you know, and it's fun to go on this roller coaster ride of emotions.
Are you exhausted at the end of a show, or are you
I'm exhausted, but it's the kind of exhaustion that you feel after you have a good, hard workout. You feel so good about yourself, and you're just happy, you know. So it's tiredness, but it's a joyful tiredness.
Do you all three have day jobs?
Yes, I'm a teacher. I teach at the International Academy of Design and Technology in Kennedy King College.
What do you teach?
I teach acting classes. Excuse me. I also teach an art history class, speech classes, that sort of thing.
How about you, Greg?
I'm also a teacher. I teach physical education at an elementary school in Wheeling.
Wow.
I'm a stay-at-home dad.
He's got the hardest job. Jason has the hardest
job. Yes, that's true. You're the tiredest of all.
Exactly. He wears me out.
Well, again, thank you very much for joining
me. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure.